Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of The Winning Drive here on Texas Football. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, and the crew's back together, joined by Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel and the coach, former high school coach at Vernon, Capel, Brownwood, Belden, Rotan, also played college ball at Abilene Christian, coached there as well, and also was on staff at the University of Texas multiple seasons. It's Coach Bob Shipley. What's going on, Coach? How you doing?
Hey, I see Mr. Jay Shipley giving us the hook of horns, too. What's up, my
Love
man?
That. Love that. Okay, actually, and you know what? There's some kind of some housekeeping stuff to get to. People have been asking, and I usually would have my – matter of fact, throw this on here right here. Boom. All right, so we're going to tell y'all exactly how y'all can get some Shipley Ranch's gear. Coaching made it easy for y'all, all right? So we'll get to that, too, covered up a little bit later on. We got lots of news, some news on the 40 Acres, actually. One of the former special assistants, Paul Chris, it has been confirmed that Paul Chris will no longer be on the Texas staff. So not a big deal, actually. Some people were expecting this. Remember, Jerry Hamilton put a note out about that. But I want to talk about what it means in that special assistant role. We got a man who was on that staff as an analyst at one point with Coach Shipley. So I want to use that a little bit, too. And we'll talk about Paul Chris and something we kind of brought up on Football Theory, how Sark is using the special analysts to help add to his repertoire. Really, really interesting. So we'll get to that coming up. Also, I want to talk about Quinn Ewers a little bit. I saw a tweet from a member of the Senior Bowl staff. He was actually one of the player personnel guys, so a former scout. And he put out an interesting tweet about Quinn Ewers that I want to get you guys' opinion on. So we'll do that coming up. Pro Football Focus has a ranking of the best offensive lines in college football. We'll see where the Longhorns are ranked there. And also, of course, who the Longhorns are playing. We'll talk about their opponents who may also have some of the best offensive lines in college football. We'll also – Olivia Newton-Vogel. Wow, killer. Hey, man, he's representing the Mavs.
The Mavs, come on, baby, man. Come on. Game one tonight. We got to set the tone. I know I'm wearing green, but the Mavs playing for a ring, a championship to be lifted into the banners for the history, for all of eternity. I'm locked in. I'm doing my 1% from home. I cannot wait. We got to lock in, all right? That's why we're rocking the headband today. Probably won't make it through the show. Probably won't make it through the next about 2 minutes, but I got to let y'all know the Mavs are taking this one.
Okay, did you predict the Mavs? Mavs were a 5 seed, right? Did you have Mavs in the fight? I mean, they didn't really hit their stride till after they made the trade, the Gafford trade. What was that? You know, like
after the trade deadline. I think they're 38-7 or something crazy like that. So they figured it out.
They did.
But no, it's been a fun ride. Dallas, we don't see a lot of championships, but the Rangers last year, and now the Mavs this year. Stars were close. I'm spoiled right now. I'm living it up. So this will be a good week.
He's kind of channeling his inner Will Ferrell.
I like that one.
Hey, I know you got a Mavs hat. He chose the headband, guys. He's a certain energy that he's going with here intentionally, and I like it, CJ. I like it, baby. I'm all with you on that. All right, so we've been talking Mavs on the show today, so we'll get all your questions and comments. We'll get to all of them. Please hit us up in the chat. Remember, super chats to interrupt the show at any time. They jump to the front of the line. We'll throw those out there. Also, I want to ask you guys, looking at the upcoming schedule for Texas football, what game is giving you an irrational amount of anxiety that doesn't make sense why you're worried about that game, but you seem to be worried about it? Now, maybe it's one of the big marquee games. Maybe it's not one of the marquee games. I want to get you guys' thoughts about that. And an NIL survey recently that was done, but that I think is really interesting. The NIL survey, interviewing and surveying some of the prospective student athletes or college prospects coming out of high school, and some of these guys and what they've been offered potentially and what their expectations in the NIL market are. I think it's a really interesting conversation we'll get into. So we got a lot to talk about on the show. Of course, get your questions in. We'll answer as many of them as we can. But let's start off, gentlemen, talking about the news about Paul Christ, who is no longer a special assistant on the 40 Acres. I will admit I've not, and maybe you have the information, CJ, I don't, who actually have filled the special assistant roles at Texas this upcoming cycle. But Paul Christ is no longer with them. Joe D. Camillus also, who was I think, more on the special teams, in the special teams phase as a special assistant. He has now moved on as well. Payam Sadat, who was working as a special assistant on the defensive side of things, he has also moved on. He joined Jeff Choate, I believe, at Nevada, if I'm not mistaken. So you have a new group of special assistants or analysts. But I think Paul Chris actually, and I think they're, I'm not saying all of these guys don't add something, but I do think what Paul Chris may have added or contributed was something that was tangible, something that actually could be quantified, which I'll get to. I think they brought him in, that six offensive line package that Texas used the last 2 years. One of the things that Paul Chris was known for in his time at Wisconsin was using extra offensive linemen, hippo package, barge package, but using them in different ways. So I think one of the things he probably contributed, or at least gave some insight into, was Texas's Big 11, Big 12 package when he was here. Much like when, you know, Sark brings in coaches, I think, even assistants and analysts. Remember, Gary Patterson came as a special assistant. I think he helped PK a lot with the pattern match, the match four, the match quarters coverage that Texas plays a lot of right now. So Texas is not, you know, this is something we've seen before. Texas is familiar, I think, with this type of transaction, bringing in a guy who has some skins on the wall, known for having an expertise of some kind, and then extracting that and having kind of a transactional relationship. Hey, they got something from Texas. Texas got something from them. And now maybe they're moving on, trying to find a better platform.
Yeah, well, I mean, we saw it last year with Gary Patterson, right? Now it's kind of in that same fold here. It'll be interesting to see how those positions are filled this year, obviously, with the talented group on the field expected to take on the SEC for the first year. So Sarkisian and his group have certainly a number of ties elsewhere. You don't know necessarily where that next group will come from. I didn't think many thought, you know, Paul Christ was an option a year ago. Coach, take me through what it's like on a day-to-day in that position. How much input actually is there? And is it something that is it more of a right-hand man for a position group, or is it, hey, we're bouncing off ideas through and through? Let me know, you know, exactly what that day-to-day is looking like.
You know, I'm sure it varies from staff to staff, and it varies from coach to coach. The way I look at it is, look, Nick Saban's been doing it for years. You know, to the winner go the spoils. I mean, you can attract guys like Gary Patterson and Paul Christ and others like that into your organization, and you pick their brain. I mean, it's just little nuggets here and there, just something that can be so simple, and yet it's not a technique, or it's not a thought that you've had in you know, the process of game planning or whatever you're doing. So I would think that almost every one of them that comes in, it's not just, oh, we've had three guys apply, okay, let's take these three. No, that's very strategic. Sark and his coordinators or his staff will go through and handpick the people who are looking for a stopgap. Yeah. They're looking for a way to stay in football for a little while until they can land another coordinator's job, another head job, another whatever. And so, you know, what Paul brought into the program may not have got a lot of attention, but I think it helped us win some football games. And that in turn will help us, you know, in the future. But I can't speak specifically because I was an analyst. In fact, it was the first season that University of Texas had analysts when Mac was there. And so my experience as an analyst is 100% different than what these guys are doing. Yeah. They didn't ask my opinion on much. Okay. These guys, hey, what did y'all do when y'all was playing Aspermont? You know, you know, they didn't do that to me, but for these guys, it's just, getting on a board and throwing ideas out there. And when something comes up, you know, just a guy gets a chalk and gets on the board and starts throwing some nuggets out there, you know, or maybe it's a situation where we're having trouble with a certain coverage or having trouble with a certain on offense, certain blocking scheme or whatever. It's just invaluable what those guys can bring. Like I said, it's just little nuggets, foot placement, eyes, different things like that, maybe drills, you know, that can help. But I think it varies from person to person as to how much input they have. And it also depends what obviously the experience of the schemes that they're used to either running or defending. And, you know, I think they add an incredible amount of value. It's not like a graduate assistant. Okay. A graduate assistant is a grunt, you know. We've all seen the GAs, and it's just a rite of passage that you have to go through to get to that next level. You see all pro guys in the NFL come in as a GA, you know, because you got to start somewhere. But these guys are special. They're almost like having a wild card on your staff.
Yeah. You ain't
paying them nothing. I mean, really, you're not paying them hardly anything, but yet you have access to an incredible amount of knowledge and someone that can help you solve problems. So I think my experience when I was there with Tom Herman and the analysts that we had, those guys were slow to speak. They certainly didn't come in and take over the room or take over staff meetings. They were very professional. They kept their mouth shut unless they were asked a question. Or they might go in with a position coach or with a coordinator and maybe with a head coach and shut the door and say, hey, I want you to think about this. You know, I can tell you're frustrated. We did this one time or whatever, you know, and just not, you know, in other words, you don't want to try to show anybody up. You don't want to go in and you know, with a defensive staff meeting and start telling what you think the way the coach guy coaching the safety should be doing it, because you don't want to make anybody look bad. You keep your mouth shut until you're spoken to, and then, or you're given a plan, and it could be, even as Greg Robinson, you mm-hmm. remember Greg Robinson?
Yeah.
The defensive coordinator in 2004 when we beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl, was a defensive coordinator in the NFL for years, was a great football mind. You know, he's a guy that that came in, was really, he and I were the very first analysts the University of Texas ever had. There was a drastic difference in the input the two of us had, but still, it's just invaluable, and it's a situation that, well, like I said, when you're doing well, these kind of people want to come in because they go, well, we're looking for a defensive coordinator or an offensive coordinator. Hey, this guy has had a lot of success, but he's been under Sark for 2 years working with him. Let's bring him in as our offensive coordinator. So mm-hmm. it helps everybody, I think. And I know Sark is a guy that's a football nerd in terms of he wants to know everything about everything that he can possibly know. And so he picks everybody's brain that he possibly can. And that's one of the things that makes he and Nick Saban and others the great coaches that they are.
Well, I don't know if you're interested, Coach, but I mean, I think they might still have a posting available.
Ain't no way. Special
assistant. I looked on LinkedIn. All right. I don't know if y'all can see it there. Special assistant to the head coach. So I think technically you still may be able to apply, Coach.
Coach, you can trade in all that land on the ranch for about 40 acres in Central Austin. What do you think?
There you go.
I can see you the link. Coach, you're overqualified for this thing. I can see you the link.
No.
You're overqualified.
That ship has sailed, and Coach Shipley has morphed into Bobo. That's my granddad. That's my grandpa named Bobo.
I like it.
I got 14 of them. I got 11 that are mine, and I got 3 bonus ones.
There you go.
Yeah, it's Bobo, man. I'll support him any way I can, baby.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the pay is on here. I don't know if they pay. They say what they're paying them on here, Coach. You might know, but it does say 40. It says salary range open. That's how they get you open. Yeah. That's what it says.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what that means.
I know it. Yeah. It's all negotiable. How bad do they want you?
Yeah.
I just know this. When they call you and want you to apply, now you're in the driver's seat.
Yeah, you're exactly.
Outside trying to get in, say, call Sark for me. Put in a good word for me. No, you ain't in the driver's seat. But when they call you, you can tell them your price.
Yeah, you're damn right. I love that. All right, there you go. So I think if y'all still want to apply, y'all probably could, but I'm with Coach. If you ain't got that call, it's gonna be tough sledding for you. That's gonna be a hard road right there. Yeah. All right. that's nice insight though, Coach. We appreciate that. Okay, let's get to some of the other. And by the way, Chris Gilbert was hired. Remember, he was rehired as a special assistant.
That's right.
That was earlier this year. So I know that he's one of them. I'm not sure if they've hired some other folks, but I know he's one of the special assistants for the 2024 year. And remember, he did a great job when he was on the staff initially, but came back.
He, an incredible recruiter, has opened up so many doors for us that originally Bruce Chambers and others had opened for us in the Metroplex. And he's a coach that is respected all over the state. And he brings so much to the staff. And I think it's an opportunity for him to work closely with Sark to pick Sark's brain, to see how Sark's doing things. Because I know he doesn't want to be a special assistant, the head coach the rest of his career. But what he brings to the table, if for no other reason, recruiting, he's worth whatever they're paying him, because he's a straight running stud. He knows kids. He knows all their coaches. And he's a guy that you can trust because he will shoot you straight.
Yeah, absolutely. He's had his fingerprints all over some of the biggest recruitments Texas has won since Sarkisian arrived, right? He even had some big wins under Tom Herman as well because of his ties to the South Dallas area, DFW in general. Has a bunch of ties to Lancaster. I believe he was a former head coach there, played ball there as well. Big-time connections. I'm talking Colin Simmons, Anthony Hill, a lot of guys whose families have been around in the area for a while, know of him, have that connection to him, and as a result, trust him and what he's telling the families. And of course, with him back in Burnt Orange, it certainly helps the Longhorns' cause in helping land these guys and getting them to the 40 acres. That's 100% sure.
Good stuff. Good insight there from both you guys.
Let me just tag this.
Go ahead.
In my opinion. What is special assistant to head coach? What does that do? Chris Gilbert. That's what you do. You help them bring in studs. You just sit and watch. Yeah. I might be wrong. They're going to get a big-name high school guy in there, I would think, that knows coaches, that knows the landscape, knows who to talk to on what campus. Knows. Bruce Chambers could tell you, you need to talk to mom or you need to talk to dad. You need to talk to the neighbor. Yeah. You need to talk to the custodian. And that's what Gilbert brings. And if I was guessing, that's what I would guess. He don't need a special assistant. He's got people all around him. You know, he doesn't need anybody helping him, you know, do his paperwork or whatever. He's bringing in guys that can help him get five stars, a roster full of five stars. And I would look for somebody from the Houston area.
I've been talking about it forever. You're right, Coach, and CJ just talked about it too. A lot of the guys with connections to Chris Gilbert that have already come into the program, even with Tom Herman, that was paying dividends. But I bring it up all the time. There's only one metro area in this country that's producing talent at a higher level, NFL talent at a higher level than DFW, and that's Atlanta. And Houston is also in the top five. So, yeah, you damn right, Coach. You better get somebody that's got deep ties, connections, and roots in DFW in that area. And you better have some guys with H-Town connections and roots there as well. And I'm with you. That's a great point. I bet chances are it's going to be somebody who's got some H-Town connections and ties. If he brings in somebody, it'll be somebody with connections and ties potentially to a fertile recruiting area.
Right. We lost Bo. You know, Bo was great down there. Bo's a legend down there. Mm-hmm. You know, we lost him. So go for a Houston dude. Go for an Atlanta dude.
Hey, and right. You're right about that. That's what Kenny Baker, right? Kenny Baker is Atlanta ties. That's what you want.
There's no limit. There's no limit on how many you can have. I mean, the NCAA does not limit you.
You're right.
Your budget might limit you, but I don't think it's going to limit Texas.
There's actually discussion, and you probably have seen this too, CJ. I don't know if you've seen it, Coach, that they are thinking about changing the rules for analysts to allow them to also be able to engage in some of the coaching duties and even in recruiting duties, basically kind of loosening the restraints on analysts as well. There's talk of them changing that. That's a lot of drastic changes happening. I've seen several reports that is also something they're considering. This is just letting me out. You can hire as many as you want to.
Yeah, the reason, in my opinion, the presidents, and they're the ones that vote on it, won't pass that is simply money. It's the haves and the have-nots. Now, when you see what a lot of people are saying, and I'm buying into it as well, that we're heading towards a super conference, a super division, maybe not even within the NCAA, whatever that's going to look like. Yeah, they may have a different set of rules because everybody can afford it. But yeah. You have these people that are barely making it as it is, and now it's really an unfair advantage, you know, to have really another coach on the field that they can't have because they can't afford it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And more though, we're starting to see that separation of the have and the have-nots. You know, what used to be prioritizing fairness and emphasizing fair for all, we're starting to see less emphasis on that as a whole. And I think that may be part of it too, Coach, but you got a good point about that. All right, let's get to some of the questions here, and then we'll get to some of the other topics because I got a question I have for you guys. Also, I want to get to that NIL survey and get CJ's thoughts about it. He talks to a lot of recruits and a lot of guys coming out of high school into college with NIL opportunities. I want to get your thoughts about what the survey had to say. But UT Boy, shout out to UT Boy. Appreciate the love, UT Boy. Says Shipley hats are the truth. Okay. Coach has hooked it up. This is the breaking news, all right? This is the big news of the show. Coach, you have worked it out with your people, how the fans can get access to this Shipley gear, right?
That's exactly right.
Come on.
It worked out. Yeah. So Sonny and Jordan are entrepreneurs. They've got a little a trailer down there in Burnett where they sell Delights ice cream. Did you look that up, by the way, Rod? Is it on?
I've not looked it up yet. I wrote it down. I ain't looked it up yet.
Yeah, well, anyway, they got a trailer. They serve ice cream and then they serve coffee, lattes, whatever, you know, espressos, all that stuff. They do events and all that stuff, but they sell merchandise on the website. And I don't know if Matt has that website. Suede. It's their kids' names.
Suede.
In fact, I got a picture of my mother with that Shipley Ranches with the blue bonnet hat right there. That was made for my mother. But anyway, so
hey, it's, look at Matthew hooking it up.
That's the oldest son is Suede, and the younger son is Shield. And so it's Suede and Shield Company, co.com. Now, it's kind of a limited, if you go on the website and you can see right there, kind of limited. We ain't got the one that Rod has on. That's the Rod Baber special right there. we don't have the Rod hat out there yet, but they can pretty much custom make anything you want. You can pretty much design colors, whatever you want. I don't know if that option is on the site now, but I think maybe it will be at some time. So you can go to Suede and Shield co.com and order you a Shipley Ranches hat.
Look at that. My man. See, so Coach said, Coach is a man of his word. He said, I'm going to find a way to get it done. Now Coach is like, stop bothering me. Y'all just hit up Suede and Shield co.com and you can get you a Shipley
Ranches hat. May I suggest a burnt orange cap maybe? I mean, just a thought. I don't know.
I saw the chat asking for them.
Hey,
have a good day, Coach.
Do y'all have access to the color burnt orange? Would the University of Texas license it out to the Shipleys? Because usually they'll send you a cease and desist if you're actually using that burnt orange, man. You know how that go.
Yeah, I don't. Already on the website. Way to go, Josh. Yeah.
Come on.
Nice.
They probably aren't making anything. It's probably just for advertising, but. Anyway, the Richardson caps typically, isn't that one you have on a Richardson cap, Rod?
I believe so, yeah. It's nice, though, man. It's a really nice, it's Richardson. My wife even talked about how nice. She's like, that is a nice hat. It's a nice hat. It really is. Like, it's just well made.
Well, hey, thank
you. Stylish, you know.
Big shout out to Matthew for putting up that graphic. And thanks for Sonny and Jordan for making those available.
Hey, no doubt. Keep that Shipley brand going, baby.
He had no idea. I mean, they were just giving to people when they would show them a ranch. They would just give them a hat, you know, just for considering a ranch. And then the next thing you know, they blow up and everybody wants one. They go, wait a minute. We don't have, we can't do that. We don't know how to do that. But they figured out a way.
I love it. Hey, good stuff there, Coach. We appreciate it. All right, let's get to a couple of questions here. I threw out a question earlier, so let's get to that one. Thank you, UT Boy, very much for the super chat. We appreciate the kindness. We really do. I threw out there, what game on the schedule is giving you kind of an irrational amount of anxiety? Like, it doesn't really, you know, maybe it doesn't even make sense, but you're kind of worried about that game. Justin Rosenthal says, there are obvious teams to be afraid of on the schedule, but Mississippi State and Kentucky are two that could swing the season, in my opinion. Justin, he's thinking just like I was, too.
For I some reason, that's a Rod Babers school of thought right there.
It's the Kentucky one. That Kentucky one, I got to tell you. It's more and more I look at it. I didn't because, first of all, they are the most – they return the most experienced in the SEC. And the second most experienced offensive line behind Texas. We talked about that, too. But then I started looking at the defense – for Kentucky. They returned the third most returning tackles, the most tackles for loss in the SEC, the most sacks in the SEC, the most interceptions returned in the SEC, the most passes defended in the SEC. And you go look at, they actually, via the transfer portal, they went out and got some studs, a couple of studs in the transfer portal, on defense. I think his name is Dumas Johnson. He's a linebacker. He's going to be a really, really good player. Yeah, exactly. He's supposed to be a good player for them. But, man, they got a stud D tackle, supposed to be a potentially a first-round pick, Deion Walker. I don't know. I just, you know, Georgia and, you know, Georgia and Michigan and Oklahoma and of course, those give you a little bit of pause because those are rivals and those are elite programs. But, man, I'm telling you, Kentucky, and it's a Stoops. I never like playing against a Stoops. I figure Bob is somewhere on the text chain giving advice about it. So I don't know. That's mine. So I'm with Justin on that. Kentucky is one for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially where it is on the schedule too, splitting Arkansas and A&M. It's in a spot for Texas. If they're not as keen to the stakes at hand, they could slip up a little bit. I'm not saying lose, but I'm saying that could be a significantly closer dogfight than what you expect on paper. Of course, I believe Kentucky was ranked 34th or 33rd or something like that in the ESPN FBI. So I wouldn't necessarily consider them one of the more talented teams in the SEC, specifically not with where some of these teams are landing. Florida's in the top 20, Auburn's number 19, Ole Miss, LSU, Tennessee, A&M, even anywhere from like 9 to 15, I think. So they're kind of on that back end. However, again, it's a physical style of play. I would say it's not necessarily a style that Texas is looking forward to playing. If I had to draw comparisons from team to team in the Big 12 to the SEC, I did this the other night. I said Arkansas, Texas Tech. They're the most perfect marriage, Coach. The only difference is Arkansas fans, they'll find a way to get home after a night out. Tech fans, you'll just see them lying on the street or in a dumpster somewhere the next morning. Kentucky to me is Iowa State. And again, it's not a very talented program, but you're going to look at it and say, okay, why are they winning 8 to 9 games every year with the style of play that they have and the talent that they have? It's all coaching. It's all development. They're going to run the ball. They're going to control time of possession, and then they'll hit you for a deep shot. That's exactly what Iowa State has done for years. So I look at Kentucky, and they've put out some really good running backs into the NFL over the past few years as well. Look, my biggest question with them is quarterback, because they've added two guys out of the portal. The times in which they've done it is really interesting. The winter portal, they added former 5-star Georgia quarterback Brock Vandegrift. All right, that makes sense. He's not going to play at Georgia this year. Carson Beck's there. He's going to the SEC. He's going to remain in conference. It's going to be his program, right? It makes sense. Then they go through the spring, and they go out and they add Grant Wimsett out of Rutgers, the starting quarterback for Rutgers in 2023. And, okay, yeah, you take a quarterback from Rutgers, but wait, he was their starting quarterback after you just get another quarterback from Georgia. Did he not improve or did he not impress at all during the spring? Is that the reason for a quarterback battle going into the summer and fall camp? It was eye-opening to me then, and I just think if you're going to look at a strength of that team, they're going to need good quarterback play, right? We've seen that with Iowa State. Brock Purdy, for his time at Iowa State, played pretty well. I would say more so in the beginning than the end, but different conversation. Kentucky's going to need that same spot, even with the strengths of their team, which will be in the which will be in the front sevens, the trenches on the offensive side of the ball, the physicality running. But at the end of the day, you're going to need a guy back there that can make the throws. But regardless, where that game is on the schedule, biggest fear for me. In UTSA, another one, coming off of that Michigan game where you'll have all the lights, all the expectations, all the hoopla. If you're not careful, that team's right outside the top 50 in the ESPN FPI. That's a team who a lot of guys on that roster were not recruited by Texas, and they know how big this game would be for UTSA. I look at that as, hey, Texas should be much improved from where they played in 2022, but at the same time, that's a good program. They could come up and sneak one by you.
That was a one-score game until, what, the third quarter?
Yeah.
That was that.
It was tied at halftime. Yeah.
I'm telling you, that was one of the best game plans. I remember that game plan, Coach, that Coach Traylor had against Texas. That game plan was money. They're the ones who kind of exposed Texas's weakness against empty formation. They ran empty formation like 20 times against Texas. And remember early on in the first half how they played keep away? Time of possession just kept the football and kept that Texas offense on the sideline. It was a really good game plan, man.
Dude, their first possession was 20 plays. It was 20 plays for 8.5 minutes, and it resulted in a field goal. And I think they would take that every single time. I mean, it was remarkable how well they came out and executed. I know they didn't find the end zone, but it was 17-17 at half on the road at DKR. If you're a coach at UTSA or a school like Rice or UTEP, you take that 100 times out of 100. You're kidding me? They're going to have a similar game style play, just keeping the ball away from Quinn Ewers and Steve Sarkisian. That's I believe that 100%.
Yep, no doubt. Coach, any other games giving you irrational anxiety?
If A&M doesn't give you irrational anxiety, then you ain't you ain't red blooded. You ain't got any blood flowing that game is so big.
It's big.
Because for all the reasons that we know, plus the fact that we haven't played in, over a decade? When's the last time we played them?
2011? So a decade plus. Yeah, you're talking about
that. I think Jackson was playing, my youngest son, then. Yeah, so and there's been so much trash talk ever since then, you know, and then – you look at Mike Elko. Mike Elko's a winner. He is a winner. He's a great recruiter. He's level-headed. The moment doesn't get too big for him. He loves A&M. He's bringing in some good people. That's a game. If you're not worried about it, you better be. And anybody that knows anything about football in Texas knows, just like OU, it's a huge game of momentum, you know. But I've said this, that goes without saying. That's one, but if you look at the rest, at that one in OU, but the one that I've mentioned before that really scares me, I don't know that they have the firepower to play with us for four quarters, but Arkansas up there is always tough. And that's one that, you got a coach that's fighting for his job. And, I don't know that CJ, have they brought in the firepower to save his job?
Bobby Petrino.
Not particularly. And I think it's going to be that combined with the schedule and when Texas comes to town. I mean, I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. But that, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Southwest Conference days and the hatred, you know, it's like, it's like Texas Tech on steroids, you know? It really is.
No, I've heard a story, man.
But I'm the kind of guy. Nobody has ever accused me of going to the game being overconfident, whether I was a head coach or an assistant coach, because I've had my butt beat by people that shouldn't beat it. And so you think you can go into a game, you don't have to worry about this one, you don't have to worry about that one. Watch out. Watch out. Jeff Traylor can beat you. He can beat anybody on any given night. If everything falls right, the dude's a stud, in my opinion. So you can't take any game and say, oh, that's a win, that's a win, that's a win. If anything, history's proven that for the University of Texas, because we got our butts beat by Maryland 2 years in a row.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
Totally different team, totally different coaching staff, you know. But who would have ever dreamed that would have been possible?
Oh man, coach, that was so. Remember that they had to dismiss their coach because they had that player pass away during like summer workouts. So they beat an interim coach, beat you, and it was was it Matt Canada that was kept running the jet sweep over and over again?
Yeah, I think it was
Matt Canada running the jet sweep. Oh, kept running the jet sweep. Ooh, ooh, and hitting Texas on that same damn play. No, you're right, coach. Any given Saturday or Sunday, if you ain't ready to go, you can be beat.
That's right.
All right, let's before we keep going here, I want to thank our fantastic sponsor. We are very lucky to have our good friends from South Point Dodge on the On Texas football team. So if you are a Longhorn fan, remember you can score an easy extra point this season when you get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock, and their award-winning sales staff, they don't play games, and they're not about gimmicks at all, folks. They just want to get straight to the point by getting you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge is Austin's automotive everything. If you're looking to sell your car, you can get South Point's best offer over the phone or online. You can get top dollar for any make or model vehicle, even if you didn't buy it from them. South Point is home of the real deal, whether you're getting the lowest price of the best new Ram truck, or if you're making sure that you get the best value for your trade-in for your old car. So visit them online at southpointdodge.com. Or visit them off I-35 in South Austin. So thank you very much to South Point Dodge for sponsoring the winning drive. We appreciate them. All right, getting back to the questions here. Here's one for you, Coach. It's more of a strategy scheme question from Syracuse Horn. Says, is the Texas D going to see a lot of delayed draws this year, get the rushers upfield, and run at a weaker defensive line group? Huh, interesting. What are your thoughts
about that? That's a very good question. That is a very good question.
That's a good question.
Well, first of all, I don't know how weak our defensive line is going to be. I mean, you know, you're saying, okay, well, weaker defensive line. I think a lot of that, I think there's some, I think a coach that prepares his team the way they should can see that. The offensive linemen just block different. You can try all you want. Screens, draws, it's not the same. It's not. But you have to know it and study it to see the little things, the whatever it is that they're going to give away. But I think it's a great idea if the rushes are getting too, if our defensive line is getting too far upfield, anybody will do that or throw a screen or quarterback draw or something like that. That's a great question. And I think it is a possibility. I hope that we're coached better than that. But you never know, man. You never know.
Yeah, what gives me a little bit of confidence in this is going back to the spring game, Texas ran a lot of screenplays, right? They like that little tight end slip. We saw them try to get Christian Clark and Jarrett Gibson involved around then as well. They didn't really amount to much. That defensive line, yeah, I mean, I know it's – the same look that you've been seeing in practice for 15 sessions in a row. But at that time, those keys are so locked in for those guys. Those plays went nowhere. Balls were batted down at the line of scrimmage. More times than not, the ball wasn't even completed because there was someone in the passing lane. They've done a tremendous job so far in this system defensively at sniffing out screens. And I think that will continue. Now, draws, on the other hand, completely different because that is kind of the goal of this rush is to get after the quarterback, get pressure, get the ball down on the ground. So we'll see if there is a delayed handoff, if they maintain a gap integrity. But I was encouraged by that fact as well. The other thing is I think you'll see a lot of depth with this unit, right? We don't necessarily have the two big horses. You don't have a Byron Murphy. You don't have a Devondre Sweat. But on the bright side, when it's the fourth quarter, they won't be playing in their 40th or 50th snaps on the interior defensive line because Texas has three guys from the portal. They returned Vernon Broughton, Alfred Collins, Sadir Mitchell. We'll see what kind of jump he makes this summer. Alex January, what kind of freshman impact can he have? And then, obviously, Jarae Bledsoe and Aaron Bryant. There's nine guys right there that can play meaningful snaps at some point this year for you, whether it be over the nose or in that three tech where we've seen Texas make a lot of noise in the past few years. So, I don't think they'll be worn out entirely. It's all about finding those key guys in the big game situations when you got to have a stop close to the goal line.
Yeah, I will say this too. I don't think that you're going to see every down lineman with their ears pinned back going unless it's third and forever. You know, a lot of times you'll have one or two that'll soft play a little bit for something like that, or maybe a shallow crossing route. You remember that time? Who was it? Malcolm Roach picked off that pass. Was it Malcolm? Pick off that pass and ran it back for a touchdown. He brought back into coverage.
I remember this. Was it him or what year are we talking about with Malcolm Roach? Is it? Chris Whaley doing that one.
Chris Whaley.
Was it Chris Whaley who did that? That was nice.
Yeah. That was back when old the defensive coordinator. Says a great defense. I'll never forget that guy. Let's see, what was his name? No, I'm kidding. That was seriously. I can't remember his name.
It wasn't Greg Robinson, was it?
No.
Who got him?
No, he came in with
Manny? Herman. No, he came with Herman.
From Houston.
Oh, Orlando.
Todd Orlando.
Yeah.
Was he the DC then?
Don't have me lie to you, Coach.
Well, anyway.
I gotta Google that.
Anyway, it's really awesome when a guy, you know, just an advantage. You can take advantage of people doing things like that. Maybe not rushing him. Maybe just stabilizing, mirror the quarterback in case the quarterback's going to rush. You see that a lot of times against a good running quarterback. But Whaley picked him off one and took it to the house. That's right. Chris Whaley.
Yeah. No, you're right. If the draw thing, though, is interesting. I could see if our – let's just say the edges are as good as advertised, if not better, on early downs and on pass rushing downs, that is truly going to be a strength in Texas on the edges. I could see teams – using the draw play, getting those edges upfield, getting them out of the way, not even having to worry about trying to block them or move those guys, rather than just, hey, let's run the draw and let's try to see if we can get them out of position, upfield rushing. But I like what CJ said, too, and you said it, too, Coach. All that stuff looks different when they're trying to deceive you, when they're trying to deceive you with a draw or a screenplay. And when you're a veteran, you feel it. It feels different. You know what I mean? When usually a guy on the snap, you know, you get contact.
Yeah, he didn't punch me. He didn't punch me hard.
Yeah, he's like, hey. Trust me, I've been out there when this happens, man. Those plays like that, where they're trying to fool you to see if almost your spidey sense goes off. Like, something's wrong. Something's off. And then the really intuitive football players who have that awareness, you'll see them kind of stop and go like, whoa, something ain't right. I mean, this ain't supposed to be this easy. Something ain't right. Let me look around. Then they'll start drifting toward the play a little bit. And CJC, right. So all these veterans that they're bringing in, they should have higher awareness if they're running a draw, this feels a little bit different. So I do feel good that there's a lot of experience on the D-line, and that should keep you from being deceived as easily with plays like that. Good question, though, Syracuse one. That's good discussion topic. How about this one? It says here from Jesse, do teams/coaches have the ability to muddy the recruiting waters, i.e. take a player they don't really want just so that player doesn't go to a certain school, then later let them go? Damn, that's ruthless. If people doing stuff like that, CJ, do people have that luxury?
Listen, I think in today's day and age where scholarship numbers are so valuable and keeping them available for guys in the portal, it's maybe not as diabolical as something like that. Maybe it has been in the past, but moving forward, especially in the conversation where we're potentially getting rid of the walk-on programs in SEC schools, those scholarship numbers are going to matter. So I don't think it's one of those situations where you'll take a guy just so another school can't have them if you have no plan to use them, right? That's kind of not where I see recruiting going, or at least not where it's been, at least in my years of recruiting. And again, this could have changed over the past, I don't know, 20 years or whatever. But if you're recruiting a guy, you at least have some plan in place for him to develop into a contributor at some point on your program. Not necessarily just to keep him away from a different. So I don't know. Maybe something I've not seen.
I can tell you 100%. It used to be that way. Wow. In the 60s and 70s. Oh yeah. They would. You know, Texas running the wishbone. They go sign a stud, the best throwing quarterback in the state, so they don't have to defend him. I mean, Darryl Royal has been quoted before, hinting to that.
Yeah.
And that was very common because, as a matter of fact, I think at one point, I don't know that there was a limit on scholarships. you know.
You're right about that.
Just how many people could you handle? Yeah. But it definitely used to happen a lot. I don't see it happening anymore. I can't imagine it happening now.
How many jerseys you got? That's how big your roster can be.
Yeah, that's right.
Dang. That yeah, man. That's back in the day, man. It was ruthless, as we know, back in them days. All right, good question there. How about this one from Ethan? And this may lead us into the survey I wanted to get to really quickly. It says, totally irrelevant. What are your thoughts on Florida allowing NIL for high school, even though the state is open transfer and anybody can play anywhere, unlike the state of Alabama or Georgia? Ethan, with that question. Yeah, I saw that now you can engage and capitalize on NIL opportunities and deals now as a high school prospect coming out in Florida. And if Florida does it, it's a kind of a copycat game. Another state is bound to do it so that they will have that recruiting advantage at one point too, or the ability to keep their players in state, which is what a lot of these NIL laws are also designed to incentivize, try to keep your best players in state. What are your thoughts, CJ? I'll give it to you first and then throw it to Coach. What are your thoughts about
you know
I know. Let's get, you know, CJ, you open it up because Coach is going to rant for a while here. So
I'll be quick because I know this one's going to be loading up. But a lot of Texas players or Texas high school players have looked at this and started to do what they can to push for it. Of course, they're calling up UIL saying, you know, let's get it down here. Of course, who wouldn't want that opportunity at this point? Other thing is with 7-on-7 on overtime, you know, the OT7 circuits, the big camps. With some of these kids, they're coming into college with 20, 30, 40,000 followers on social media. Folks know who these names are before they even play it down. And it'll only continue growing that aspect as well. So I understand the idea behind it. But, hey, wasn't it Virginia who said if you commit to a Virginia school, you'll still be able to make money in high school as long as you follow through with your commitment to one of our state schools? Florida's going to follow suit in that way. And like you said, keeping the guys in state for these, you know, big blue blood, you know, programs in the state of Florida. Listen, we've not seen Miami be good in quite some time. Florida State had a great year ago. They've been wishy-washy as well. Florida's in the dumps. It looks like they might be down for the count with a new coach after this season as well. UCF, on the other hand, starting to embrace the Central Florida area, right? They're starting to embrace some of the portals. So for those schools who are still kind of trying to get to where they should be in the state of Florida, this is what this rule will enable them to do. Make money in high school, stay close to home, and now come play for a state school. Could you imagine if this was the case in Texas, where if you could make money in high school, but you had to commit or at least give a verbal pledge to an in-state school, what that would do for programs in the state of Texas? Oklahoma would be shut out. LSU would be shut out. Ohio State and the five stars that they seemingly grab every single year in the state of Texas would be shut out. It would do wonders for Texas. And I think it would do great for Baylor, TCU, Houston, and Texas Tech as well. So we'll see. It's copycat world. But, Coach, I'm ready to hear this one because I had to give it a little precursor there for the big show.
It's good stuff.
Man, what happened to hometown high school? Football. Pride in your community. Well, we start going to the highest bidder, man. It's just, why mess up one of the greatest traditions, you know, in our country, in high school? Hmm. High school football is community.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Sorry. Pride in the community. In terms of, you know, barbershop talk. I remember him. I cut his hair since he was 5 years old. I knew his grandma, you know, whatever, you know. And now you just going to the highest bidder, essentially. I mean, it just takes out what's great about football, high school football, to me. And that is kids that grow up with a dream to play Friday Night Lights. You know, they grow up. And instead, I've worked my whole life, say, as a kid, and I've bled green, Bernie Bulldog Kelly Green, my whole life. Then all of a sudden, you know, the local barbershop is going to give an NIL to another guy who plays my position, and I've been working for, you know, 7-8 years for my senior year, and now all of a sudden, Somebody now that can still happen. Anybody can move in and take your place. But when it's for money and for endorsements, if that ever happens to Texas, in Texas, it'll be a sad day. I don't really care what they do in Florida. I could care less about that. I am a Texas boy, born and bred, love Texas high school football, and I love the pure, as pure as that. I'm not sitting here saying that I have never had a guy move into my team on my team. I never recruited a player to come, but I'm telling you, it's just like my friend Tim Buchanan at Aledo. Success breeds success. People want, you know, as we said, the winner to the winner goes to sports. People will move their kids when they're young enough into a program because they want to be, you know, play for a winner, get more exposure, all that stuff. I don't know how you can stop that from happening. And it happens. Don't stick your head in the sand and think that kids aren't being recruited. They are being recruited, and the UIL has a tough job of trying to do all that. But when it comes to paying and money, I don't make me want to go throw up.
No, you're right about that. No, coach, I feel you because I don't know. That's crazy because, you know, in Houston, I basically was recruited too to go to Lamar High School. That wasn't close to where I live. That wasn't my zone school, but I went through a magnet program. And so recruiting has been happening forever. Now it's ratcheted to a whole nother level. And I guess this could just add fuel to the fire. You just put a whole bunch of gasoline on it. So now you're right. I don't know where you go, but I'll say this, coach, you are right about kind of how this is affecting the purity of, you know, the sport, but damn, I wish I was born this day and age. I was born way too early, coach. Coach, these are you seeing the numbers that are coming? Oh, first of all, let me get to this NIL survey that was done by On3. It's an anonymous NIL survey that they did. So basically, they went through and they went to the On3 Elite Series and basically educating the top 20. It was a series educating the top 2025 high school football recruits on NIL entrepreneurship, and it took place in Nashville. And they surveyed the top 2025 recruits in conducting this survey. And one of the things they found was that, as it says there, over 50% of the top 2025 recruits said they would take less NIL money to make sure that they got to the right school. I think it was 54%. So they would take less NIL money so that they would be in the right fit at whatever school it is. But to me, I look at the flip side of that and I think to myself, so 46% of the kids are saying NIL will determine where I go, period. Like that's the top priority for me is the NIL money that determines where I go. And it's interesting because I think more and more as we become more and more used to and accustomed to NIL being the law of the land and then revenue sharing becomes a thing and all of that, I think this number will decrease. I think more and more you'll have kind of what you're talking about, coach, where they the cash rules everything around me, dollar bill, y'all. Well, NIL will be the ultimate rainmaker, and then we'll start looking at the program and the school. Because we can always transfer now. So you're giving, you know, it don't mean what it used to mean to make a bad decision early on. Coach, I was stressing about that decision. I'm like, man, this is truly a 40-year decision, not a 4-year decision. I got to get it right. And I was deciding between Mac Brown, R.C. Slocum, Bobby Bowden. Joe Paterno, now looking at it too. That wasn't right. And Rick Neuheisel. Because I was looking at the coaches, right? And it meant a lot to me. Thank God I chose the right coach. I chose Mac Brown. All right. I chose a great human being, a great coach, Hall of Fame coach, and a Hall of Fame human. But hell, you know what I mean? I stressed about it because I thought this is it. This is final. I'm not transferring. I'm not leaving. But now, is it final? No, it's not final. You can always take the initial deal with some school, take the NIL money, and then transfer it to the school of your dreams. You can have your cake and eat it too now. So I don't know if I can tell these kids not to take the money.
I may not be right, but my understanding is this whole NIL thing came about because the colleges were making so much money off of these kids.
Yeah.
You know, with TV contracts, high school programs are not making them. It's a TV money. You can't play. I mean, they may play a piddly game here, you know, in almost all games now, especially, you know, 4, 5, 6A schools, they're streamed, you know, so you can watch them. But the school's not making any money on it. If you make a run in the playoffs, you will make some money, but all that does is just go to pay for the other sports expenses at the school. The school is not getting rich. The school ain't making any money, you know. So there's a big difference in why the NIL, in my opinion, and y'all tell me if I'm wrong, was looking at, you know, the money that the schools are making off of these kids. The kids ought to have some kind of opportunity to make some money off of what they're doing for the school. But that's not the same in high school. It's not the same. Not the same amount of money, even close.
Yeah. Especially with the conversations coming out of SEC spring meetings, where it sounds like they may do away with the transfer rule, right? It'll be free reign all over again, where you can pack your bags and you won't have to sit out. So that'll change the game in this world as well. It'll change how some of these NIL deals are constructed, obviously, because it is right now you have to put your chips in the basket in which you committed and signed to, unless you want to sit out a whole nother year. And that's a whole different delay of your development, your on-field, the extra NIL money that could come your way as a result of being a good on-field player as well. And then the other thing, I think some folks kind of looked at it and said, yeah, we saw what happened at Texas A&M. We saw them dish out however much money it was for that number one overall class of all time. And, you know, 2 or 3 years later, you're looking around saying, oh, 8 of the 12
gone.
Top players are in the portal. They're playing elsewhere, probably for a bag as big or even bigger than what they got at Texas A&M. So that's interesting. And then, you know, you could even go back to Alabama too. And those guys who maybe not up to speed with the Texas A&Ms, the Ohio States, the Texases, when it comes to what they can provide financially from the NIL front, but you have a great coach. And that's where the good fit comes in, right? Some guys took that NIL discount because they wanted to play for Nick Saban. They wanted to play for an SEC championship. They knew that no graduating class under Nick Saban in the last, 15 years didn't leave with at least one ring, because that's all they did in Tuscaloosa at the time. Makes sense to find that best spot originally out of high school before selling all the way out for your big bag, because, again, those bags are a little bit bigger in the NFL, right? Especially when you make that second contract. So I think it's safe. And I think that there's an honesty level now that you're seeing from high school kids who have seen kind of the trials and tribulations of NIL for a few cycles now, saying, yeah, I don't want to end up like the guy that flew all the way across country, signed with a school on the opposite coast, transferred out before he ever played a snap and is now suing that other school, right? You know, it gets messy. And I don't think that's the case. Most of these kids want to go all the way through, because at the end of the day, they're ball players. The dream is to make it to the NFL. The dream is to make their family proud with what they can do on the field. And this is all extra, right? It's the icing on the cake. So I don't know. I'm hopeful that, you know, we see more of these stories where kids say, yeah, like I value the relationships. I value the coaching. And then everything else is what makes football great. But, you know, I think that's the direction that we're heading to at the moment.
One transfer. You could transfer one time. Everybody makes a mistake unless there's a coaching change. That's what I would love to see.
Coaching change,
a guy comes in, not many people run the option anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One time, make a mistake. Everybody, you get a second chance. Be eligible immediately. But after that one time, unless it's a head coaching change, then you should have to sit out a year. That's my opinion. The problem is the decision makers, I don't even know who the decision makers are anymore. Is it the NCAA? Is it the state legislature? I don't know who it is making it, but they better get a spine, because they're all rolling over and playing dead for people. And before you know it, it's anything goes. And the college football is now the NFL.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Just real quick before we move on here, because I saw this article over at 247 Sports, and they had a one of their reporters. He talked to agents, college student athletes, and also spoke with collectives and directors, a lot of insiders in the NIL space. And he came up with a range of value in the NIL market for certain positions. And we've heard them talk about this before, right? We heard that Matt Rhule mentioned that a quarterback will cost you $1 million, elite quarterback costs you $1 million. Ryan Day spoke to his fan base lobbyists, I think. Sorry, his boosters and donors, I should say. And he told them, hey, you know what? A defensive end elite tackle costs you about $1 million. An elite quarterback will cost you about $1 million. So the range that they have for – so I'll just give you the starting range of these positions. They had quarterback at $500,000 as the starting range via the transfer portal. This is kind of the market for each position in the transfer portal. They said $500,000 for the quarterback market. Running back market starting at $200,000. Wide receiver market, $75,000 is where it starts. O-line market starting at $350,000. D-line market starting at $250,000. Linebacker market, the low point is $100,000. And the DB market, $120,000. Now, this is, I'm assuming, to get your market value via the transfer portal. If you're one of the better players, I'm not saying everybody's getting this, but if you're one of the top players, that's the kind of range you're talking about. That's a lot of bread, guys. That's just, I mean, can you imagine that kind of money for a 19-year-old? So, of course, it's not only influencing your decision. Hell, man, that may be the overwhelming determining factor in your decision when you're talking about that. And then I'm from a lower middle class household. Well, imagine if you just from a dirt poor household. Imagine if you was just from a household that guys who had nothing, living in poverty. Those numbers are... It was a generational changing number. So NIL, man, like you said, Coach, I guess somebody's got to get a hold of it because right now it's in a place where we're entering Wild Wild West territory. They always say every great cause begins as a movement and then it turns into a business and deteriorates into a racket. That's just capitalism. We're in the racket phase of NIL already. We're already racket phase. We're just like, you know, making rain, money laundering, all kind of crazy stuff going on. They need to get a handle on it. All right. Before we get out of here, let's thank another one of our great sponsors once again. Always happy to thank the folks at Flat Creek. Usually I would toast the end of the show with some Flat Creek wine. I don't have any. That's how good it is because me and wifey, we have a good time.
It's either how good it is or how drunk you are.
It's good, Coach. I tell you, usually the Super Texan I'd recommend is fantastic. The Rosé is great from Flat Creek, but we want to thank them, of course, for being one of the sponsors here of the Winning Drive. Did you know that the most awarded wine in Texas, back folks, is actually Flat Creek Estate Winery? That's right. The vineyard closest to Austin, Flat Creek Estate Winery, is just minutes from downtown, and they've won award after award this year for their vintage wine, Super Texan. It is fantastic. I can vouch for that. Super Texan is now available at your local Specs to give it a try. So go check out Specs. Of course, Flat Creek is also a gorgeous venue with barbecues and wine tastings every single weekend. It's perfect for a day date with your significant other. So check out Flat Creek Estate Winery. That's flatcreekestate.com. Flatcreekestate.com. Yeah. I may have another bottle of Flat Creek. I think I actually may have another bottle of the red in there. I think my wife's kind of saved it. But I would recommend Flat Creek Estate, the wine, but also recommend the venue. It is a great venue, folks. So if you got something special coming up, think about Flat Creek Estate Winery, flatcreekestate.com. All right, couple of questions, and then we'll get out of here. Jesse, how about this, Coach? Jesse, I named my puppy Shipley. You're welcome.
Boom. I like that.
Shipley brand continues to grow, baby. Just continues to grow. Love that.
I guarantee
there's probably a lot of Longhorn fans who – how about that, Coach? How does it feel that, you know, there's some Longhorn fans out there that probably named dogs and kids after your family members?
Yeah, well, that's humbling. Humbling for sure, but it ain't when you step in that big pile of crap.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be like Steve Martin in The Jerk. You remember what his dog's name was?
You're right about that, Coach. That's true.
Yeah, that's cool, Jesse, man. Yeah. That's cool. I hope he's a good dog. I hope he don't crap all over the place like my kids did when they were little.
We turn it on the TV and hoping that just praying that Shipley doesn't make a mess when you come back home, right?
Oh, well, thank you very much, Jesse. That's a very kind comment from you. Kelly. Kelly underscore horns up. Rod, what's your thoughts on the corner blitz? When is it most effective? I'm not gonna lie, Kelly. I hate the corner blitz. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. I hate when and PK loves it. PK runs it every time they got a corner in the boundary. It's about a 40% chance that damn boundary corner is gonna blitz. They did it in the spring game. I can count like probably every game this year, there's a point where they do. And they loved Ryan Watts on it. Loved bringing Ryan Watts on that damn corner blitz. And honestly, the truth is, the perfect time that it was called was the time that it should have worked, but it didn't. It blew up in Texas' face. That was the best Bryce Young Alabama game. It was a perfect call, perfect time. And Ryan Watts just couldn't wrap up Bryce Young, but he's the best player in the country, so no shame in that. I've seen it work maybe once or twice. It doesn't work a lot. Have you? Do your Patriots a success rate of it? It's really low. It's a very low success rate play. I don't like blitzing my best coverage defenders and then putting guys who are not as good at coverage in coverage in place of my best coverage defenders. I don't like doing it very much, but PK, he likes that cornerback blitz. I'm not a fan. It's most effective to me. Really, honestly, the way they use it, especially when you're trying to wrangle in like a dual threat QB who's not a sophisticated passer and not really a seasoned passer. And they're kind of one read quarterbacks. Like Jalen Milroe is probably a good example of it for a guy. You bring it against him because you can keep contain on him. You know, he's dangerous when he gets outside the pocket, and then you can almost flush him and force him into one side of the field, into being a half field read quarterback in that sense. So I think it's a good situation, but I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not a big fan. PK likes it. I don't.
Loves it.
He does. He loves it. Loves that damn corner blitz.
It's hard to disguise it.
Yes.
That's the issue.
Because you got to have that safety over the top, or the quarterback sees it, he's just going to raise up and hit him. And now it's one-on-one in open field. So if you look, you got to see that safety cheating over, because you can't let that guy have 10, 12-yard cushion. He's going to turn around, catch the ball, and go with his one-on-one.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. And on DBs, I'm not going to lie, I love DBs. We're terrible at disguising that blitz. Every time I see a cornerback blitz,
don't practice it. That's why it doesn't work as well. Like that play that you brought up with Ryan Watts coming after Bradshaw, he disguised that thing very well. More times than not, you have a wide receiver screaming hot, 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 hot.
Yep.
Tackle, tight end, whoever is off the edge right there, he'll just one hand. I mean, that's all it takes with some of those guys, right? They're only about, what, $1.80, $1.90. Those guys eat them up for lunch. Big old fist from Cam Williams will just about do any cornerback coming in off the edge. But disguising it's the biggest issue. I don't have an issue with the play call, because more times than not, it is coming at like a 3rd and 6, a 3rd and 7, a place in which you can probably not expect it all too often. But it's the disguising and the delivery of it that leaves teams out to dry more times than not.
Yep, totally agree. All right, last question before we close things down. This comes from W.A. Jones. Thank you for the question. Do y'all think Orgy – is it Orgy? Is that his name?
I think so.
Oh, man, I'm not going to be good with that during the season. What do y'all think Orgy
– I don't do those personally.
I'm not an Orgy guy. but Orgy – they can have some good T-shirts with that. I can take some fun without some T-shirts. Do y'all think Orgy playing quarterback for Michigan is a problem for Texas? We haven't done well in the past against mobile quarterbacks. Milroe had a decent day with his legs against Texas despite the interceptions. That's a great question. I want to say Texas has been okay versus mobile quarterbacks. Have we had a mobile quarterback really get loose on Texas? They did a good job against Avery Johnson and Will Howard. Bryce Young.
I think when you come into a game plan at Texas knowing that a quarterback can – impose some damage via his legs, they don't. It's the guys that kind of have that sneaky athleticism that Texas isn't planning on running that does beat you. With Orgy, I think you come into that game knowing you're going to have a spy, right? It was Michael Penix. He didn't run very often at all. I think he had negative rushing yards coming into that Texas game. I think he had five or six rushing attempts that totaled about 40 yards in that game, and they all came in the most inopportune time for Texas. The other one is obviously Dillon Gabriel, the end of that Texas OU game in Dallas last year, where he ran for probably 30, 40 yards on that drive alone, in which, again, cost Texas the football game. But coming in, again, keeping that guy in the pocket, I thought they did a good job of it. It's when that pocket breaks down and those lanes open up, you don't have that spy designed for him. You had it against Alabama and Jalen Milroe. I thought you did a fine job against Kansas and the approach that they had with their all-world elite track speed quarterback that faced Texas a year ago as well. They tried the triple option at times, and it didn't really help their cause. I think they only scored 14 points. It's those guys with the sneaky athleticism. Texas will be just fine against Michigan in terms of the quarterback running game in my eyes because they've done it so far under PK and his tenure at Texas.
Great stuff there, Matthew. That was really good stuff there, CJ. Appreciate that. All right, real quick, I did want to hit this while we had some time. Pro Football Focus ranked the top 10 offensive lines in college football. Number one, they have Alabama. Number two, Georgia, who Texas will face. Number three, LSU. Number four, Texas. They got Texas at top five O-line. As you see there, Oregon 5, Ohio State 6, Missouri 7, Miami 8, Florida State 9, and Florida 10. Texas will play a couple of teams on that list, but Texas being 4, Texas should be in the conversation as one of the best O-lines, and they'll get a chance to prove it multiple times against Michigan. I think will be the biggest test. Then Georgia will probably be the second biggest test for this Texas offensive line. If they perform in those games, guys, and then control the line of scrimmage in those two matchups, I think that would make the case that they are one of, if not the best O-line in the country. They're definitely in the conversation.
Yeah, that back-to-back week with Oklahoma and Georgia is going to be interesting. Of course, Oklahoma adding Dominic Williams this past season. They really like what they have off the edge. You know, you look at Ethan Downs returning again, Trace Ford from Oklahoma State 2 years ago, transferred over to Oklahoma a year ago. But they got some young guys that I think that they're really high on. That's PJ Adebobore. God, that's a tough name. I can never get it. Taylor Wine, and of course – I think it's R. Mason Thomas as well. So they like their edge guys. Luckily, that's exactly where Texas has some big bodies, right? Kelvin Banks, Cam Williams. Can Dominic Williams pose enough of an issue by himself, essentially, to disrupt that middle? I'll take the Texas interior 9 times out of 10 there.
Like that. All right, last little update here, guys. NCAA has just approved corporate advertisements to be placed on college football fields this fall. An advertisement centered on the 50 and no more than 2 smaller flanking advertisements elsewhere on the field. So you will have a corporate sponsor. What is it? Is it Campbell Williams Field or Williams Campbell Williams Field? They'll be a sponsor of Campbell Williams Field. Now, we know that.
Shipley Ranches, baby. Shipley Ranches.
Yeah. Hey, you got to sell some hats, coach. Come on.
Hey, we got to sell ranches, we got to sell a lot of hats, folks. Get on that website. Suede and shieldco.com. Hey, and while I was texting Sonny, my daughter-in-law, who, by the way, check her out on Spotify. Check her out on Apple
Music. That's right.
She's quite talented. Was in Nashville for several years. Anyway, I texted her a while ago, and she said, I think I can do that. I'll see if I can order some burnt orange caps. So you need to go ahead and order some now so you'll be able to rep. And then when the burnt orange caps come in, she better order a bunch of them.
I love it. There you go, baby.
Hey, one more disclaimer. Chris Whaley was 2013, so that would have been, depending on when it was in 2013, Manny Diaz, if it was earlier in the season, if it was after the BYU game, it's Greg Robinson.
It was Greg Robinson then, wasn't it?
Well, it depends. I mean, Manny Diaz got fired after the BYU game.
I know. I was at that game.
Yeah, and I was too. That lightning delay.
Yeah, I was at that game, and that was early on. So I want to say by then they had already decided to.
Yeah, it's probably Greg Robinson. Yeah,
because I will say it was right after the game.
What was that quarterback's name? BYU set all
Taysom,
the records.
Taysom Hill.
Still playing. Taysom Hill. Still playing.
Yeah. Turn that name up, coach. Chad's not going to like that one.
With a knee brace on, just running through that defense. It looked like the white Vince Young out there. Just we call him the vanilla VY, man. He was just gone. All right, we got to get out of here, folks. Hey, thank you, Coach. Thank you, CJ. Thanks to Matthew behind the scenes. He's a real MVP. Thank you to our sponsors, South Point. Thank you also to our good friends at Flat Creek Estate. Ronnie, thank you to all you guys for participating. You really make this show fun and worth it. We appreciate all of your participation. Until next time, remember, we'll be back on Monday for the winning drive, 4:15-ish to about 5:30-ish. Until next time, same time, same channel. Hook 'em horns.
Welcome.